So hello, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Money Interviews for Unlock Your Life. And today I am sitting with Azim Zahoub Khan. And Azim is a wonderful entrepreneur in Sydney, Australia. And we met actually through a program and one of our mentors that we share, Alex Mandosian. And Azim is, he calls himself the Profit Liberator, or he's known as the Profit Liberator. And what Azim does is he unleashes hidden profits for businesses. And he is known to enable entrepreneurs to get financial freedom within 4 years and really get businesses past the $1 million mark. So I thought it's really interesting to have him on this show and ask him about money and what financial harmony actually really is, and what his personal journey has been, because I know we've done a talk last week, and I know he's been on his own financial journey for years now. And I really, really ask you to listen carefully to this man, because I've learned so much from that talk that I'm sure you will learn a lot. So Azim, welcome very much. I'm very happy to have you.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me. That's awesome.
And I would like you to introduce yourself on the question of what specific incident actually started your journey.
Well, I guess in terms of a specific incident, it wasn't one thing in particular. It was a number of different things that came together that made me realize that, in fact, for want of a better term, in terms, I was often a square peg in a round hole. So obviously, you know, I started my career off, as many other people do, working as an employee. And what you then, what I would then find is, particularly the interesting thing was, is because I went higher up in various organizations, you know, I worked at Microsoft and some other fairly hefty organizations earlier in my career, is that you suddenly start to realize that you're doing or wanting to do things differently to the way they're actually expecting them to do, because the way they're doing them is not getting them a result. And when you try some of your things, you are getting a result. So that's what I say, you know, sometimes you're a bit of a square peg in a round hole. And I would often come home and say to my wife out of frustration, I can't be smarter than everybody, so why are we having all these problems? And then, you know, she encouraged me and then basically went out, you know, doing my own consulting work and applying different things in there. So in terms of one specific incident that caused me to become an entrepreneur, I think it was always there. And I think what it really is, and this is what faces a lot of people, is, and as I mentioned to you in our last talk, you know, I was making and selling candles when I was in primary school. So for people overseas, that would have made me about 9 or 10, right? Yeah. And so I always had that entrepreneurial spirit about me. And I think what's happened is over the years, as different life experiences and different roles and jobs, you actually find that a great analogy is you're peeling away pieces of the onion, and then you realize what's inside, and you realize, you know what, you actually do have a voice, and you actually do have some way of contributing, and you don't have to be like everybody else. Now, that's not to say that being an employee is a bad thing, because I'm not like everybody else, and they're not like me. So it really boils down to individuality. So the answer to your question is, it was actually a number of things, and more, it's really a journey of self-realization rather than say, right, tomorrow I'm going to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I love that. That's so true. I think everybody can relate who's listening to that. Somehow everybody who starts to be an entrepreneur somehow has been one for years in their employee journey, if they have been, yeah.
And in some organizations, that can, and more of the larger companies are finding that that's actually a very good thing to do, is what, you know, as you probably heard the term entrepreneurs, but they're actually asking people to run a department as though it was their own business. Yeah. And that has some fantastic results. So they still have the safety net of, you know, their wage and their healthcare and all that sort of thing, but they actually get to use their skills, their entrepreneurial skills, to go out and do it. And if you actually look back at many, many large businesses, half of the subsidiaries came about through employees saying, you know what, I think we can do this part of the business better. I'm going to set up a company, and they create a contract with their previous employer to supply that. It's great for the employer because they save costs. great for the employee because they just created a business out of what was their old job. And you don't have to look very far to find that happen again and again.
That is so interesting because that's exactly how it goes, right? Just improving things and dreaming up things of how can I help and how can I serve. I love that.
The biggest challenge, I guess, for people, and I face it all the time, is the specter of self-doubt, I call it, you know, is can I do this? You know, why should I be able to do it and nobody else can? You know, and when you do things like that, I just look at other people and say, well, you know, Sir Richard Branson,
yeah,
he was able to do it. You know, you look at, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, he was able to do it. That doesn't mean our journey is the same as either those gentlemen or ladies for that matter. There's some amazing female entrepreneurs around. But the thing that often people forget, and I have to remind myself a lot, is when we see these people, we're looking at the end result of what they did.
Absolutely. Okay? Yes.
We say, wow, that's fantastic. So Richard has his own island. Well, he has two, but he has his own island. That's amazing. But there was a time when he didn't. You know, there was a time when he had no money. There was a time when he was eating probably chicken soup, right, because that's all they could do at the time. We don't see that, right? All we see is the end result. And that's why the shelf behind me is full of biographies of successful people and businesses, because you see where they came from. It doesn't mean we all have to struggle, and we are very privileged and gifted to be living at the time that we are, where a lot more is accessible to us than 10 years ago. We wouldn't have been doing this 5 years ago.
No, we wouldn't. No, what I love about what you're saying, the examples you're taking, is also we see Sir Richard Branson, but what we often forget to see is that he didn't do it all by himself.
No.
He had an idea and he thought, how can we get this idea into the world? And then he started collecting people.
Correct. And that's why he has 300 businesses plus, you know. He doesn't run them all.
No. He doesn't do a lot in them.
Correct. But, you know, he's built his own... He's built his own brand, and that's part of, you know, when you were introducing me before, part of helping people scale their business and to effectively exit their business is just that, making them let go of what happens there. And the problem is, or the challenge, I guess, for a lot of people is it's sometimes difficult to disconnect the operational side and running the thing or doing the thing and obviously driving the business to the next level. But something that comes into play a lot is the money side of it.
Yeah, because that was my next question, because I think you help businesses go through the $1 million mark. And I think a lot of our listeners are like, okay, well, that's far away from where I am now. So this doesn't pertain to me, because I'll be there in 20 years and I might call Azeem, but I'm not even feeling like I'm nearing that ever in my life. I'd just be happy if I had a steady stream of clients.
Well, that's, you know, and that's true. But my answer to that every time is 100 cents makes a dollar, right? You're not going to get to the dollar without making that first cent. And making that first cent, getting that first client, looking after that first client, you know, and in my role, I've had many different clients and not all of them have worked out at all, you know, because you get clients who have, and every time I take full responsibility when I have to sack a client, because I do that, if it's not working, I say, you know what, we probably shouldn't be working together, because I don't feel right about taking their money, because I don't feel that we're going to get the result. And I will tell them why, and I'm very frank about it. I say, look, you know, we're not a good fit. I thought we were going to be a good fit. We started off as a good fit, but we're not a good fit because. Yes. And then I'll give them the reasons why. Yes. And so every time I do that, I feel that, okay, why did I not see that earlier? Or why did I not see that before and save some time and effort and obviously dollars? And the reality is, you know, as we discussed last week, you can't see the top of the staircase from the bottom.
No.
So everyone listening says, hey, you know, that's so far away. You know, I've taken clients from literally having no business at all and just being someone who, you know, I have one lady I used to look after. She was just busy doing Facebook stuff over here and then doing Infusionsoft over here. And I helped her coalesce that into a business where she was getting paid for her stuff. And look, honestly, it was enough for her, and she was a single mum looking after a daughter. It was enough to get that going. And at the end of the day, when we stopped working together because I'd set her on the right journey and she was happy, like you said, I don't think you need me anymore, because that's one thing I always make sure that I don't become a crutch for people. I don't think you need me anymore. But at that point in time, she'd gone to $150,000 a year.
Which is a very attainable goal for everybody, I think.
Absolutely. Now, if she chooses to scale that to the next level, she will come back and we'll talk about it. But for the moment, that's where she wants to be.
Once you're at a steady business stream like you're talking about, it's actually quite easy to scale. The first 100 yards is always the most difficult.
Always the most difficult. And that's where two things often happen. One is, as I mentioned before, self-doubt as to whether you do it, because the first thing you did didn't work and you go, oh my God, this is not me. Well, that's a bad move. And the second thing is often people compare themselves to other people, right?
That's not the death of any business, isn't it?
You're not that person, right? The people that started that, they're not you. You're you. You've got to do you. And the quickest way to fail is to keep comparing yourself to either a somebody that you think has got it all, and if you really peel off the onion there, you'll probably find that they're struggling twice as hard as you are, right?
Yeah.
Or your own expectations.
And then even if I tend to look at musicians when we talk about that and think, what if every single female singer in the world thought, well, I'm not Maria Callas, so let's not get on the stage. If they did that, then we would be missing out on so many beautiful music.
Absolutely. And often my way I address that with people is, if you try something new, and it doesn't work, where are you going to be? You're going to be exactly where you were when you started, right? Now, I'm not talking about extreme things like trying to run across a railway track in front of a speeding
train. That's something different, yeah.
That's a different set. That's extreme sport, right? But if you're trying something in your business or in your first thing, if you try it small and test it, then if it doesn't work, that's okay. You haven't actually gone backwards. You're where you are when you started, right? And that's why you don't take massive gambles with your business or massive gambles with your direction. The market will decide. And you and I can't sit here and say, hey, that's going to work, because it won't. We don't know that.
We never know. I test everything, and I will keep testing until I'm 140. There's no other way of knowing what will work than test it.
Absolutely.
And having it fail and tweak things and build it in a way that actually will work. But a lot of entrepreneurs, somehow, once they tested something and it fails, they think, oh, I have failed. And if you make it about you, then it will always be a failure. If you think, so what happened here? What is the one thing that actually I could tweak or I could do or whatever? What went right?
Being emotionally attached to the result is a disaster.
Yes.
It's a disaster. Because once you're emotionally attached to it, then, as you just rightfully pointed out, anything that doesn't go right becomes your own self-perception of you, right? And that affects right throughout your life. Now, that's not to say that you don't take responsibility for the result.
That's a whole different story, yeah.
Correct. You are 100% responsible for what happened, but then make it so. Make sure that if you're going to commit to doing something, then do it. Don't say, oh, well, I shouldn't have taken Azim's advice or I shouldn't have taken this advice, because you've got to be responsible for what you do.
No, and I'm sure you've heard this. I hear a lot of people when I talk in front of a group, they say, yeah, well, it's easy for you to talk in front of a group. And my reaction is always, do you know how old I was when I was in front of 1,000 people group for the first time. And they're like, no, I said, I was 14. So I have been practicing that from whenever I can remember. I love being in front of people and I love being in front of a group. And I practice. And I've been doing that for, 42 years, I was going to say, but I probably didn't do it when I was a baby. But I've been practicing that so many times and I've failed so many times and I've integrated all the feedback. So now it looks easy, but it didn't always be easy. And I was wondering, you know a lot about money and it seems as if you exactly have everything in place. But I'm guessing that that was not always the case. And maybe it still isn't. So
That's right. It's not always. It hasn't always been the case. And you're right. It still isn't, right? It is because as you, every day that you move forward, you've got a new goal that you're reaching for. And I'm not talking about the goal of, I want to have $5 million in the bank and all that sort of thing. You're talking about the goals. And I always equate dollars to choice. The more dollars that you have, the more choices that are available to you. That's it. That's really the only way I put it. You know, the old saying goes, if you have to ask what the market price is on the menu, you can't afford it.
Exactly, yeah.
And they kind of look at you. So money is something that you really have to, you have to make friends with the fact that sometimes you won't have as much as you think you need.
Yeah.
And once you're friends with that and you realize that, A, whatever you have, there's always somebody worse off than you. Always. You know, I've yet to find the poorest person in the world.
Right? Exactly. And there's
always someone who has less than you by your things. But often if you look at countries where there are people without a lot of money, they're still happy, right? They're still happy. You find that some of the farmers in places like Italy, they're very poor.
Yeah.
So they don't eat meat every day because it's so expensive, but they save their money and they buy the best meat possible once a week, right?
So I love that, yeah.
You know, so
how do you do that, make friends with money? So how did you do it personally?
How did I do it personally?
Or were you born that way? Maybe you weren't.
No, I wouldn't say I was born that way. I would say I didn't have the program. I mean, look, I was fortunate enough that my dad was a professional. He's passed away now, so he was a doctor. So we never really wanted for anything from that point of view. So I don't have that story of, you know, we're poor immigrants or anything like that. But by the same token, I think I may have just come up with a phrase. We didn't want for anything, but we didn't get anything we wanted.
I love that.
I just made that up. You can have that.
I love that. Yeah.
But that's the truth, right? So if I wanted something that was expensive, I would get that's really expensive. You know, and I don't think you need something like that. Maybe be something like this. So we were taught to respect those dollars. But by the same token, you know, did we eat every day? Yes, we did.
Yes.
You know, did we have nice clothing? You know, like enough warmth and stuff. Yes, we did. Did we have the Armani suits? No, we didn't. Of course, we didn't. Right. So it was a difference between, you know, not wanting for anything and not getting everything you wanted. Right?
Yes.
So I had that education, you know, obviously we always heard that's too expensive kind of thing. And even though, you know, my nan and my dad could have afforded some of those things, but, you know, he never did. He was quite frugal. But I went back in his story, you know. He picked oranges on a farm to put his little brother through university, right? So he was more of the guy who did, you know, and when he was a doctor, he used to literally deliver babies to in Fiji, where we're originally from, and those people had no money, so they'd give him a box of vegetables, right, in return for delivering a new family member. So how did I become comfortable with it? two things. First thing was the realization that the money in the world will never run out. There is so much money, right? It's ridiculous.
It's becoming more every day.
It's just ridiculous that what's available to you. Now, then having, then making friends with that thing, saying, okay, it's out there. There is my share. I can get pretty much as I want without taking it off somebody else. Right? That's where I live. I mean, you can, and there are people out there who think differently, but I don't subscribe to that. Is
no.
There's so much money. We can all have as much as we want and not disadvantage somebody else. So that was the first realization. You know, it's not going to run out. Don't panic. It's not going to run out. The second thing is that, yes, of course, we all stress when, you know, there are bills to pay and mortgages to pay and all that sort of thing. But the other thing is, you know, you will always find a way. The nature of a problem is that it has an answer. Every problem we come across has an answer. Right. Otherwise, it can't be. There are no unsolvable problems. We may not have found it yet. Right.
That's a whole different story, yeah.
Correct. We may not have found the answer yet, but the answer is definitely there. I mean, we couldn't fly all those years ago. You know, the computers we had years ago, you know, or push buttons and stuff like that. So making friends with us, A, realizing that there's plenty. There is plenty. It's not
there's plenty and there is an answer.
Correct. And there's an answer to whatever your thing is. And yes, sometimes it means, okay, well, we've got to take a bit of a step back. We've got to be frugal with what we're doing. And that's okay because you're building towards the end result. But at the end of the day, what I've realized probably in the last 7 or 8 years is if you add enough value in any way, shape, or form, you don't have to worry about the money. No. It will come to you, right? Because people will pay for that value without even you asking for it.
Yeah, and that's so true. And what I've come to discover is there are so many people, listeners, who are probably thinking right now, well, I have so much value, so where is my money? I'm adding so much value, but nobody's buying it for me. Nobody wants my offer, and there's so much value in it. So how to get it?
So what you just said is a really important thing. There are a lot of people who think that way. People say, this is amazing. Everyone should have one of these.
Yes.
Well, did you ask them if that's what they actually wanted?
Yeah.
And 90% of the time, what you and I and our friends and family can sit around a table and say, hey, you know, this is a great idea, and then take some action on it, only to find out that nobody else thinks it's a great idea.
Exactly.
It's so common, it's frightening, right? And so when I'm interviewing somebody, my two favorite questions are, like a client, my two favorite questions are, how do you know that and what makes you say that?
I love it. Yeah.
So when somebody says, oh, well, you know, there's, you know, the people are going to want this thing and, you know, and they're going to love my program or they're going to love the work that I do, in whether it be, you know, a dentist or a psychic healer or whatever, and I can say, well, how do you know that?
Yeah.
And often if that question is met with silence, because no one's actually asked them, no one's actually prodded them and said, well, how do we know that everybody wants that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like a person who comes up and says to me, oh, I've got this fantastic thing or whatever the thing is, and I say, great, you know, who else is doing that? And they go, nobody. And you say, why do you think that is? And they
go,
and I said, if nobody's doing it, there's a really good chance that nobody wants it.
There's a really good reason for it, maybe.
Yeah. So maybe we should find out first before you go and, you know, remortgage your house for this idea and all that.
And that's so true, because even if you look at innovations that are coming out today, they're more often than not, they are just improvements of products that were already there, or there are two ideas coming together. And it's so rare that something totally new comes out. It's just not the way it happens.
And often, and one of my, I guess, my gifts is that I'm often able to take something from one industry and put it into another, and it creates a breakthrough. And I say the same thing to all the clients. It's basically 95% of everyone in your industry knows 95% of what there is to know.
Yeah.
So if you want a breakthrough, don't ask the other guy or girl in your industry. Ask somebody from a different industry.
Exactly.
You know, when we were, you know, running a cafe business years ago, I was asking people in manufacturing how they went about purchasing. And people said, why are you doing that? Because everybody in the cafe industry does it the same, right?
Yes.
But the guy in manufacturing gave me some great ideas. I mean, there's some great examples. I mean, like, for example, the roll-on deodorant.
Yeah.
That came about from the ballpoint pen.
Wow.
Because originally, and a lot of your listeners will remember that they used to be stick deodorants, right? They
weren't true.
And the guy was looking for a different solution, and he was basically playing with his pen and thought, well, hang on, if I can make the deodorant liquid, I could use a ballpoint, just like a ballpoint pen, and that's where the roll-on. That's from one industry and put it in another. And there's so many examples.
That's where real innovation comes from. Now, a lot of our listeners are also thinking, well, a million, I don't even know if I want a million. I just want to be to not lie awake at night about money. And I always say, well, it's not about having 6 million or 6 billion or I don't know what number you get yourself stuck on. It's about creating financial harmony so that you feel free inside to proceed with whatever you should be giving to the world. And for me, financial harmony is the place where you stop lying awake and you just stop being so aware of yourself and start giving to the world whatever you need to give. And I am really keen to know what your definition of financial harmony would be, because you obviously have a totally different way of looking at things. So I'd love to hear it.
I think you may have just summed it up in what you just said is when you don't lie awake at night about it, right? And a lot of people misinterpret that statement with money in the bank, right?
Mm.
I look at it the same way that I look at a client's business. I will say to them, and I'm not trying to jinx you, but if you were to get hit by a bus tomorrow, what would happen to your business, okay?
Yeah.
The same thing goes to you personally. So you may say, okay, if I were to get sick tomorrow and have to be off work for 6 months or whatever it happens to be, what would happen to the family and mortgages and things like that? Now, a lot of people equate that being able to sleep at night, is they look at it as one thing. They say, oh, well, I need to have $50,000 in the bank in case of a rainy day or an emergency. But a lot of your listeners, as you've described, pouring all of their revenue back into their business, they're growing their business or whatever, or you know they've got commitments with kids and everything, and it's very difficult to say I'm going to put some away. You know, and I don't even need to tell you, but there are many, many books that you can read about, and they all say the same thing. You know, basically, pay yourself first, put a little bit of money away. Okay,
yes,
that's great to listen to, but a lot of people find that hard to do.
Actually start not listening to it and throw it away, but actually start doing it.
And then the other thing could be, and just using that description about being hit by the bus, is it could be as simple as making sure that you are adequately insured, right? That your insurance, so you may not have the $50,000 in the bank that's going to pay the mortgage for a year or whatever, half a year, whatever it happens to be. But if something happens to you, you're paying $120 a month, whatever it is, to make sure that you're insured at the correct level so that your family or whatever your commitments are is looked after. Then you can sleep. Because then you know, if something happens to me, the family's going to be okay. Right?
But what really made a difference for me is actually what you said earlier in the interview is so it's these things. I love that. And what made the biggest difference for me is the understanding that there is so much money in the world, I just need to get a little bit more creative in how to find the stream that wants to go to me. And that made it all like, hey, I am in control here. It's not coming from the sky or from the heaven or from good luck or whatever. The minute I understood that it's really in my hands, it's just in my creativity and not in my bank account, that really made me sleep well at night.
Well, if your listeners want a great classic book, and I can't remember the author now, but it's The Richest Man in Babylon. It's not a very good book. It's an awesome book. I recommend it to everybody. As I said, just read this. It's a great read. It's a great story, but it's got so much truth in it, you know. And then it always, what you just said, it always reminds me of the joke where the gentleman keeps praying that he'll win $1 million in the lottery, and then it doesn't happen the first week. So he keeps praying, and it doesn't happen the second week, and he keeps praying, and it doesn't happen the third week, and then he's getting really upset. And then God speaks to him. He says, "Look, can you help me out and buy a ticket?" You know?
Love that. Yeah.
and it's so true. You know, people say, "Oh, you know, this money is going to come to me." Well, you've got to do something. You've got to add some value, and sometimes it's not directly. You know, sometimes it's not directly, but often I give with my what I've learned and my own learnings and my own skills freely. Like if one of your listeners were to get in contact with me and have a particular issue, I'm not going to send them an invoice. I'm not going to send them a bill. I'm going to do what I can to help them. But that person may then know somebody else who says, "You know what? I was talking with this guy and he really helped me out. You know, I can see what he does may be more suited to what you're doing," and the money may not come directly. And a lot of people are focused on, "I'm giving you this, why aren't you giving me something back?" You have to be attuned to the fact that just give and it will come back to you, but not always from where you think.
It's so true. I can attest to that in 1,000 examples too. It's so true. I love that. I also love the way you approach that. I do that the same. There's so many people who are saying you shouldn't give away your things. Yes, you should.
Yeah, you just, and it's really quite interesting because you people say, "Well, you know, if you tell them all of the secrets and all that sort of stuff, you know, they won't pay you for it."
No.
Well, I've got news for most people, and most people actually, all your listeners, if they actually look themselves square in the mirror and look at how many pieces of advice or great things they've heard or read or done programs or whatever and haven't done it, haven't actually taken the action that was prescribed to them, 90% of the time, we've all done it. You've done it.
Yeah,
I've done it.
I've done it for 20 years. Yeah.
You know, and we call that shelf development, don't we? Instead of self-development, we buy the program and we put it on the shelf. Okay?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I'm not worried because the reality is I can tell people the answer to their, you know, what they need to do in the next steps. Yeah. But then doing it, nine out of 10 times, that's when they put their hand up and say, "You know what, that thing you were talking about, that could really apply to my business. Could you help me make that happen?" Right. So I have no problems. If I know something, and I think I mentioned this to you in one of our previous conversations, if I cannot sit at a table or listen to a conversation, I've actually interrupted people in restaurants when I've heard them talking because I have very good hearing, so don't talk about me. when I've been in restaurants and I've heard people over, speaking to each other and sometimes younger people who just don't have the life experience that I do, just in terms of years, forget, anything else. And I'll just excuse myself and say, "Look, I'm sorry, but I overheard what you were saying. Would you be open to me making a suggestion?" Because they're like going around and around in a circle, right? And then they said, "Sure." And I will tell them, And they go, "Well, that's amazing. Thank you very much." And that's great because I can't, it's something that makes me not sleep. I hear somebody's having a challenge and I know what they could try or to get more things, and I don't give that information, I feel that I failed. I'm not looking for that invoice. I'm not looking for that check. And do some people want to take advantage of that? Yes.
Yeah.
However, you very quickly develop the line to sort of say, you very quickly pick up in terms of when it's the things that, hey, you know, if we want to really do this and you want me to work with you, let's see how we can work together.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
But I have no worries, because the reality is I can relate my experience, but in terms of a lot of the other information and stuff, it's like that I've heard it from somebody or I've seen it demonstrated somewhere. You're just a receptor for this information. You're not really inventing anything new, like you said before.
Never. No, I love that.
Yeah. It's the application of what you know which makes the difference.
That's a whole different thing, yeah. So what if people go on this journey and actually proceed and stop listening and reading and start doing? What becomes possible for our listeners?
Okay, well, there's two things that immediately start happening when you actually get off your backside and start doing stuff, right?
Yeah.
The first thing that comes across to people, which is also related to very much to money, because money underpins a lot of things in our modern world, like we're talking about mortgages and having enough, and then we already discussed is what is enough, is the first thing is self-doubt, okay?
Yeah.
And often they will try to hang on to what they're doing from before, even though it is patently clear that the new thing is going to work, because you've tested it and you're getting the feedback and saying, yeah, that is going to work. And as the old saying goes, you can't steal second base with one foot still on first. So you have to make, at some point, and that change often stops a lot of people moving forward, okay? So then the next thing about taking action is a lot of people will just go to and I say this with the greatest of respect for Anthony Robbins, and someone will go to an Anthony Robbins style thing or T. Harv Eker, and they will be there with 100 other people, and you're fired up, and you get home, and you want to do this stuff, and you almost just are out of control, and you just start doing stuff, you know, haphazardly.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you have to plan until forever, because then nothing will get done.
No, but if you don't have any system, then
correct. You know, something is better than nothing. But what you need to actually do is make sure that everything you do, there is a measure that comes back. Some way to measure what you're doing. You look at people running advertising all the time. All the time. Okay, how do you know if it's working? Customers come in. Okay, so how do you know that customer came in because of your advertising or because of the talk that you did, as opposed to someone told them, I don't know. That's not good enough. You have to know, like, we are built on feedback, right? So I don't understand why people in their business don't actually apply what they do in their life. I mean, you touch the stove, you're going to get burnt, right? It's very simple. So you don't do it.
With food, if you don't eat, you feel tired. And if you eat certain food, you feel energized. It's the exact same system our body uses. Yeah.
So you take that action, you measure what's going, but here's something that a lot of people, and I've only learned to do this relatively recently, is, and you'll know this from your own business, is when you start doing something and the results don't come immediately, you start to wonder whether it was a good idea.
Yeah.
You start to doubt that you're the right person to do it.
I've been there thousands of times, and I'm sure you've been there. Yeah.
all these things creep in, you know. And, you know, the money hasn't started coming in, you know, $1,000 bills right away.
Yeah.
The thing that I learned relatively recently is that if you stop and look at how far you've come, you'll be amazed. Because you see lots and lots of quotes. People say, I don't concentrate on the past. I concentrate on the future because that's where I plan to spend the rest of my life. And they're all great quotes, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is you have to stop and see how far you've come.
Yes.
Because that is what encourages you to keep going. Because you say, wow, we've come this far. You know.
And there's also all the information there of what you actually need to improve.
Correct. Based on what you've done. And then what you've done can actually be a great indicator of, you know what, we probably need to change the direction of what we're doing, right? Because it's just not working. And then you adjust. the biggest thing about all of it is you have to keep moving. If you stop, you'll just stop, right?
Everything stops.
Keep moving, keep adjusting, find a different way to do things. But one of the best analogies I use is a child. When the child starts to walk, what happens? She gets up and is really wobbly, or maybe pulls herself up and she falls down. And then what does she do? She readjusts what she's doing, she gets up again, and she keeps readjusting and trying until she can walk.
And it takes 4 years to actually walk like an adult.
Correct. Right. So, but we take walking for granted. I mean,
talk about it in a way like, I could walk. My mother says you could walk when you were 12 months or 11 months and 10 days or whatever. And I couldn't walk. I was able to move on 2 feet. I could walk when I was 4, because there's a whole process behind that of improving and walking differently and whatever. There's
but the thing. I guess the thing out of it though is you keep readjusting. If it's a worthwhile goal, right? So you keep readjusting your approach until it happens. As parents, we don't turn around and say, oh, you know what, as in you tried walking for a few weeks, didn't really work, don't worry.
Go back into the weeping and
you don't have to walk, it's overrated, you know? So if the goal is something you believe in, right, and the goal is worthwhile, then there's a way for it to happen. You just have to keep readjusting your approach. And even the baby, now all your listeners are going to be watching the next baby trying to walk, right? But even the baby takes all sorts of feedback. And you know what one bit of feedback is that we actually don't take heed of a lot is what happens with the parents the first time the baby starts to take some steps. Yay, right? Positive feedback, positive reinforcement. You see the baby's all shaking, all of a sudden a big smile breaks out on their face, right? So we've been doing this since we were born.
And there's no parent saying, what, you fell down, you stupid jerk. There's no parent doing that, right?
You know, and then, you know, you even see parents as the baby sits down on their nappy, you know, like, oh, you know, and they clap again. So they're clapping on the failure, right?
True.
Why do we forget that?
Okay. We forget.
Why do we forget that experience?
I love that. Yeah, and I really resonate with that, because the only reason I am getting ahead in business is because I have a team of cheerleaders around me who are willing to give me feedback where I need to improve, but who are also willing to celebrate.
Absolutely. And when you've got that team around you, sometimes you can even celebrate your failure, right?
Yeah.
Because you can say, well, what did we learn from that? And it can be very confronting, but hey, you know, that's all part of it. But the thing is, it's, you know, for your listeners, is you take responsibility for what's happening to you. At the end of the day, you're your own CEO. Whatever has happened, it's your fault.
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
You're responsible. And as I say, you know, when I give a talk, I say every decision you've ever made in your life has brought you here today. Right, and I can prove that, because if it didn't, you would be somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you just got to take that responsibility for the wins, for the failures, and, you know, blame is the worst thing.
You don't need that pressure. You don't need that.
You know, and people blame so many things, you know. They blame the economy, you know. They blame the government. You blame, you know. And as you know, you've heard people say that, regardless of, you know, whether Trump or Clinton got into the U.S., because that's the most recent, one of the most recent elections.
Yeah.
How did it actually affect the man on the street? Yeah. It did.
Not at all.
It did, right? Lots of rhetoric, lots of news, because news likes to report all the bad things, right?
Yeah.
But did it actually make a difference to somebody there? And they're only in there for 3 years at a time, so it doesn't matter who's reporting, right? There'll be something to discuss. I'm sure, you know, labor laws can change laws and that will have an effect. They're not saying don't be alive, but the reality is some people got so hung up on election results and so hung up on things. And here's the big thing about if you're going to be responsible for your actions, right, and you're going to be responsible about, you know, the money that is going to flow through your business as you build it, then one of the key things is don't sweat about stuff that's not in your control. If you cannot control it, don't stress about it.
No. No, I love that. I love that.
Because that is what brings you undone. When you start stressing about things that you cannot have control over, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
Right. Then there's the problem. Yeah.
What would your recommendation be for our listeners to do immediately after we finish this call? So they press stop. And what, because I'm all about, we've been talking about it, you can read all you want, you can listen to anything, but what are you going to do? So what are they going to do immediately after they stop listening?
Okay, the thing that I would, and obviously we've got listeners all over the world, so I'll try to use something very generic for them.
Yeah.
Is when you go into a shopping center, right, or a mall or whatever, you go up to the sign and you're looking for a shop. Right, for a store or whatever it is that you want, and then you put in where it is that you want to go. So you want to go to a certain fashion store that sells, you know, beer cutting or whatever it happens to be. Okay, so you punch that in. Then what happens next? The sign at the bottom says what? You are here.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Say where you want to go, but you are here. So what all your listeners should do as soon as they get off this is work out where they are.
I love that.
Take exact stock of where you are with your business, with your ideas, with the people around you. You may be around non-supporting people, and then some of that's family members, right? The people around you, with your money. Just work out where you are, you know, to start with. Then you can work out where you're going. Because if you're trying to go somewhere and you don't know where you're starting, well, it's not going to work, is it?
Never. If you try to go to Milan and you think you're in Paris, but you're actually in Amsterdam, you're never going to get there.
Correct. So my advice to everybody is when they finish off this call is just figure out exactly where you are before you can take the next step.
Absolutely. I love it. Thank you very much, Azeem. I'm sure we'll get you back on somewhere in the future because there's so much more I want to talk to you about. But for now, I think this is exactly what we needed for this interview. And I really would like to tell all our listeners to stay tuned because next week there's going to be a new interview and there is more and more and more. And the one thing you can really do for your business is start surrounding yourself with new people. That's one thing, as Azeem said. And the best way to do that, if you don't know where they are, is start listening to podcasts of where they're actually talking. So stay tuned, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye.